I am the guardian of a divine covenant. That dagger is sacred. It was being smuggled to safety when you stole it. If the dagger gets into the wrong hands...
I will take care of your knife.
Greetings and well met, travelers. You have found your way to Dragonreel, a magical journey to the realm of fantasy movies.
Welcome back to Dragonreel, the fantasy movie podcast. This is episode 31, where we're going to talk about Prince of Persia from 2010. And I'm so desperate to prove I'm more than something the king scraped off the streets. I'm Chris.
You are something that the king scraped off the streets.
Wow, harsh. That is harsh.
I'm sorry.
And in chair number two, I did see what I was looking for, and it's Sharon.
You did? Oh, I'm sitting up straighter now.
I think
I know what you mean.
I think you do. In chair number three, he plunges into 100 foes without a thought. It's Pete.
When you say plunge...
you know exactly what I'm talking about.
Oh, okay. Fair enough.
Yes, it means what you think it means. And introducing in chair number four, for the first time ever, no man can stand within 20 yards of him and live. It's Matt.
Yeah, which explains why we're doing this over Skype and not in person.
Right.
Exactly right.
I knew it.
So it's for our own safety.
Yes.
Yeah, I am a very considerate killer.
Oh. Well,
tell us about yourself, Matt.
Hey, I'm Matt Presley. I write fantasy under the moniker MD Presley. I come from a background in film, and I was at a wedding last night with an open bar, so I have open bar regret today, so if I trip over any more words, that is my excuse.
Blame
now.
It on the wedding.
That's okay. I will occasionally have a glass of whiskey here while we record. There's no shame.
I'm kicking myself for not having poured myself one. It's just out of reach.
Tell us about your books before we go into the movie.
Oh, I think I write Flintlock Fantasy. It's kind of a fantasy reimagining of the American Civil War, except, you know, with like psychic exoskeletons and some airships and lethal glass daggers, if that makes any sense.
Ooh.
And yeah, it takes place. It's got multiple timelines, but the main timeline takes place 2 years after the war. You got your female protagonist is sent.
I'm hooked. I'm gonna read that.
All right.
I'm starting tonight. Yeah.
Oh, good.
I'm going to see if they're all.
So are they available on Audible or Kindle?
No, unfortunately not on Audible because, yeah, I know. But that costs so much money to get done.
It really does.
And, you know, so it's...
Chris, you're going to be reading them to me tonight.
Well, what about Kindle? Is there a Kindle version?
There is a Kindle version.
Okay, so Alexa can read it to you.
Excellent.
Yeah. And she has a very... good voice.
Yeah,
I don't know. Alexa,
yeah, Alexa's pretty good.
It's one of the better ones we've
Chris
got.
Chris is even better though. Chris has a magnificent voice.
Well, I'm glad you could join us, Matt.
Yeah, welcome.
And we're going to talk about a movie called Prince of Persia. It came out in 2010. I did not see it in 2010. I only saw it a few years ago. How about you guys?
I saw it in the theaters.
Wow. I saw it within rental time of when it came out.
Okay.
Oh, there you go.
Hmm.
So this had a really big, but this has had a major blockbuster budget. This was like 150 to 200 million. And as far as like receipts in the US, it was a bomb.
Right.
It didn't even cover, it recouped maybe half that.
Hmm.
But the worldwide gross was enough to make it at least break even.
Well,
right. If not a little more so.
Right.
I have an important question. Who's going to summarize it?
Oh, I would be happy to.
Okay.
Oh, please.
It's all you, Matt.
All right. So, in a mythical ancient Persia, a prince utilizes parkour and Gyllenhaalic charisma to overcome the evil machinations of his uncle and save the empire as well as the world.
Wow. That's,
but you said right away that it was the uncle, and you don't know.
I had
know
a friend in college who later became a Gyllenhaalic. It was, a sad story.
I have a Gyllenhaalic, usually in the summertime. It's a nice summer drink.
Did someone dare you to use the word parkour in a conversation today?
No one dared me to do that because I've been, I've been a huge fan of David Bell for many years. And when they came out with, the movie B-13, in which he features prominently, I was very excited about that, and I actually bought a bootleg. Should I say that online? and then you know, I bought the actual release version, which had better stuff on it. And then Prince of Persia was coming out, and David Bell features very heavily in the parkour choreography.
Okay.
He may have even stood in for Jacob a couple of times. But like Chris, I played Prince of Persia. I just didn't play Sands of Time.
Okay, I played Sands of Time and didn't get to finish it.
Gotcha.
I enjoyed it a lot. My first Prince of Persia game was Prince of Persia 3D on, I think, the Commodore 64, but maybe it was a... It must have been a IBM compatible, what they called them at the time.
Matt, did you play the game? I just want to find out if...
Wasn't even aware it was a game, I don't think, when it came out.
Oh, wow.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
so well, good. So that's two of us that did not play the game.
So this pushes us into a realm of cinema that I don't think we've gone to much, which is... This is the first video game we've done?
Yeah.
Yes, I believe it is.
So the question is, can a movie be really fun if it was a video game?
Can a video game make a good movie?
Yes, that's the question.
For what it is worth, amongst my gamer friends, my video gamer friends, Sands of Time was the best of the Prince of Persia series.
Okay.
So I think that's the reason why they... based it off of that one. I also think that this might have been Bruckheimer's feeble attempt at another franchise.
Yeah,
because he was just coming off of Pirates. So
Well, Pirates was, I think, 2005, was it? Like the last Pirates? And then the next one came out in 2011. So he definitely had another Pirates in the, like, that's where they rebooted it without without Legolas and
Right.
Which I totally remember their names, but yeah, which is always a good sign of a character is important when you can't remember their names.
Right.
But exactly. So I mean, he definitely. I mean, I at first I thought he was trying to find a new the new Pirates, which let's also remember was based on a ride in Disneyland.
Yes.
So
yeah. That's right.
So I mean, he can not he himself. You know, they can make magic out of crap, but it didn't work on a video game when it worked on a ride, when you sit and, you know,
which is kind of weird because a ride is, you know, that's not really a story, you know. A video game tells a story. And having played the Xbox version of Sands of Time, there's not much about the movie that's really based on it, but the concept of the dagger that has the sand in it that will turn back time for a limited amount of uses.
I also think that it was the popularity of the game that drove them to use
Of
this iteration of the game, I should say.
Well, I never played the game, but I liked the plot of the movie. I could tell that the parkour stuff was from a game, though. I mean, it just wasn't... Okay, so it was in the movie, but my feeling about it was that part was a little bit too much over the top. But I don't know. Maybe guys have a different opinion than.
So I think.
Well, I mean, okay. So there's like two core conceits in the Prince of Persia. Does anyone want to give a good definition of what Prince of Persia was? And I mean, Sands of Time was versus the other Prince of Persia? A new ability that was in that one that wasn't in the others.
Go for it, Matt.
Oh, no, I'm not familiar with that. I'm sorry. Please.
Okay, sorry, and I understand, and mind you, I went back, and this is cobbled together versus, you know, by things that I've heard, and some of them might not be true, but as I understand it, it created a new game mechanic where you could turn back time.
I see.
And so it was a platformer where you could turn back time, so you could try to figure out your way through it, and then, like, oop, nope, that wasn't it, turn back time for however long, and try it again.
Right.
Gotcha.
Am I describing it correctly? Because I guess
That's how it worked. It was really hard to in the game. The challenge was knowing when to use that ability. Because if you overused it, you wouldn't have it when you needed it, and it was very hard to recharge.
Mm. Okay.
So just like the movie.
Yes.
Which is funny because then, but I mean, that's a cool ability, and that works really well in a video game. So I think that the movie had to have two things in it, and that was parkour because of the platforming, which is what people identified with the game, and then turning back time, which
I love the turning back time stuff.
Right.
I thought those were some of the neatest scenes. Like, I know I'm maybe jumping ahead, but I love the scene with the princess and Right. Destin.
Well, it makes sense that that was their starting point. And we're going to build an action movie on these two concepts and everything else is going to fall in place around it.
Right.
So they had their milieu and they had these two ideas.
Well, but that's unfortunate because that works great for a video game. That is a great mechanic. But that takes away all the conflict. Just push the button, start over again. Oh, just push the button.
I think that's why they included the conceit of the sands being a limited supply.
Right. Which is
So that's why they didn't, do. But again, it like you said, it's not. This does not a great fantasy story make.
Yeah.
wait a minute, Pete. Are you challenging whether this is a good fantasy movie?
Oh, don't get me wrong. I enjoy this movie thoroughly.
Okay.
I don't enjoy it for its fantasy elements.
Uh-huh.
I enjoy it for the ludicrous over-the-top parkour and battle scenes.
Which is fair. And so the game is a lot of jumping. It's basically solving puzzles by knowing what to jump to, in what order, and when you can run up the walls. And they put that in the movie because that is service to the game.
See, now to me, because, blind person here, that was secondary. Mm-hmm. Secondary. I liked the love story and the plot.
Well, I think once they had the knowledge that they were going to do all this platform jumping, they were basically going to emulate a jumping game. Of course they called Mike Newell, because when I saw Four Weddings and a Funeral, I thought, this guy knows parkour.
How could he not?
What? For real?
No. Hugh Grant was all over the walls in Four Weddings and a Funeral.
Oh, don't mention Hugh Grant. Chris does not. I love Hugh
Grant. So I'm looking at Mike Newell's his IMDb page and all of the movies that he did before this one. And really the only thing that had... I mean, he's got a Adventures of Young Indiana Jones TV movie. But other than this one, Harry Potter is the only one... Harry Potter and the Goblet of Fire is the only one that has the sort of, the fantasy, the magic, the jumping, the action that you would expect, from...
Which,
right, because he was a big... Didn't he start out as, a Merchant Ivory guy?
I don't know.
Start out, adapting literature?
There is a bit of that.
Hold on a sec.
Matt, what were you going to say?
That Harry Potter movie, Goblet of Fire, is probably my favorite of the Harry Potters. This is someone who did not come from reading it, just watching him, and it's just that's fun. It's everything that a Harry Potter movie needs to be.
Mm-hmm. That's funny because it's my least favorite because it's just, to me, it was a bunch of scenes from the book that they really kind of lost the cohesive thread to me. But if you didn't read the book and you saw the movie and you were able to follow it, we have got to talk about that.
Oh, yeah, we need to... That might be one of our next movies.
So, Matt, you're on our list.
You just bumped that up the list.
I think it's very good. It's bright. It's fun. It's fun. And that's, the later one's just oh, my God, this is so...
Depressing.
PG-13, grimdark. I mean, in a good way. I enjoy them. But, what I imagine a Harry Potter, a children's movie that's... breaking out of the eggshell of being a child, children's movie, that was a good transition for me.
This is interesting because I read the books and I walked out of the movie theater saying that was very different from the book. So it's fascinating for me to get a different viewpoint on this. So
let's come back to that when it's actually our
right. When it's actually...
Which reminds me, Prince of Persia, Sands of Time.
Prince of Persia, right. I loved the princess. I loved her voice. You guys can tell me if you thought she visually fit the role.
The problem with Gemma Arterton is that she's adorable.
She's adorable, okay.
She's just adorable. So when she plays Hottie, it can't help but be adorable.
But that's good, right? Then that means
it doesn't really cause the tension to mount the way that I would like it to.
Oh.
Because it's she's oh, you're so blah, 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 and it's oh, you're adorable when you say that. Come on. Really? Is that how you feel? Come on.
Well, so what did you want, Pete? You wanted more sex appeal?
I wanted a young Emma Thompson.
Hmm.
Well, don't we all?
Yes,
for
yes,
everything.
We do. Yes, we do.
I don't know.
So one thing I can tell you about this movie, no Persians were harmed in the making of this movie.
That's for sure.
Absolutely.
This is a movie so whitewashed, Tom Sawyer would blush.
Right? Yeah, there's not anybody of non-English origin in this movie except for Ben Kingsley. who has some Asian origin ancestry.
There you go.
But everybody else Gandhi. Is. Yeah, yeah. But everybody else is just solid British all the way, except for Gyllenhaal, who pretends to be British occasionally.
Well, the thing was that, is was that problem, he obviously struggled with that accent at first.
Yeah.
And somebody pulled him aside and said, relax. Yeah. You're trying hard.
Yeah, there were a couple of his readings where it was like, you could have kept the American accent, really.
Yeah, yeah.
Because he was from the gutter, and American accents are gutter, and British accents are obviously higher
high class.
Right. Even you know, even if you used that to explain it, that would would have been good enough.
Yes, exactly.
I still love the princess. I'm going to disagree with Pete from the
She's
square.
She was in a couple of like these kind of fantasy movies, right? As
yes.
Sort of princess. I can't remember their names. Tarzan Singh, I think, did one of them.
Oh right, he did a shoot. Yes, he did was it Snow White? Gods of Egypt.
I don't know. Maybe I don't. Yes, she seems to have that prince. Other than the girl with the gifts, I mean, she's got that princess thing down pretty well.
Yeah,
I think. And if as you guys were saying, like if they had applied any more bronzer to her, I think she would.
Right.
She would have uniformly gold.
Did they put bronze?
She was
on her?
a bit spray tanned in this.
Okay.
Yeah. She was also in Clash of the Titans and Byzantium. Hansel and Gretel Witch Hunters. That's what I remember her from.
Oh yeah, we got to do that one.
who was she in that?
We will. She was Gretel.
Oh, she was Gretel.
Yeah.
I knew I remembered her voice. Yep. I love her voice. Like you said, she's adorable.
So they.
She is, I'm telling you.
This was, I gotta say, a boy movie.
I liked it. I'm not a boy, I'm a girl.
There's exactly one woman in the world in this movie.
Yes.
No, there was the harem. Let's just, point.
And can you give me the entire exposition that the harem managed to get in this movie?
I think that scene was straight out of the opening of Aladdin.
It was very Aladdin-esque, if that could be used as a phrase. Yeah. Like,
it was a huge nod to Aladdin.
I was waiting for the music for, it's sad, Aladdin's at the... Okay, sorry. I'm just,
And given that it was distributed by Disney, I thought that they might play that up a little more. But
so apparently. What do you think? Do you think that was deliberate?
Oh, God, yes.
Okay.
Oh, I think
yes,
that was
I think so. It was a nod and a wink.
Yes.
I mean, he was basically Aladdin from the opening of, right? Of Aladdin?
Right,
I mean,
absolutely.
Very much so.
Yeah.
Is that his backstory in the video games?
I don't think.
Is he a street urchin?
So
does he have a backstory in video games?
Not really. I mean,
does he get adopted by the king?
Back then, they had booklets that came with it that gave you a backstory,
And
you just kind of glossed it over because it didn't have anything to do with the mechanics.
So in the first one that I played, Prince of Persia 3D, the idea was that the princess had been kidnapped and you rescue her and you become a Prince of Persia for rescuing the princess.
So really, Matt, what they're saying is they don't know.
And in The Sands of Time, I had that other story in my head so solidly, I don't remember if they changed it for Sands of Time.
So people, when they write in, should tell us if they know the backstory of Dastin.
But he's not Dastin in the Prince of Persia.
Right, he doesn't have a name in the
He doesn't have a name. He's just referred to as Prince or the Prince.
Oh, okay. Now, I kept asking Chris, is his name Dustin or Dastin? Because it just...
Dastan.
Dastan.
D-A-S-T-A-N. Dastan.
Okay, because the way they were pronouncing it, just... Chris said it's because, it's British people.
So Dustin?
That it didn't sound...
Dastan.
They didn't do the ah like we do. It's
here,
like...
it's this.
Yeah.
Where's Prince Dastan? Prince Dastan isn't here!
Yes, it sounds like Dustin to
me.
Do you think that's the Destin, whatever, how they're pronouncing it, had why they shoehorned in that whole Destiny, narration at the beginning and end?
It feels like it.
I don't know if it was, an intended to be a reference, but it might have been intended to put that in your head to associate that.
Yeah, because I remember watching it, I was like, oh, it's got a, not even a scroll over, they're narrating it to us, what is this going to... it never came back into play.
CinemaSins would give this two sins right up front because it started out with words on the screen and then did voiceover.
Yes.
I was like, pick one!
Yes.
Oh, see, now you didn't tell me there were words on the screen.
Agreed.
Yes, so, I didn't have to.
I'm sorry. The
audio description did.
I wasn't listening to it at that point. I was...
So props to Disney. This was a Disney film, which means that the Blu-ray has audio description. So, good on you, Disney.
Yes.
So it described all the parkour
Yeah,
stuff.
It described everything. Yeah.
Running giants.
Okay.
Which is much more interesting for blind people.
Can I jump in real quick?
Sure.
Okay, so the game is set in ancient Persia. While the Sultan is fighting a war in a foreign land, his vizier, Jafar, a wizard, seizes power. Now, mind you, this is 1989, before Aladdin was even in the story.
Well, Jafar is a character in the Arabian Nights stories, so...
Oh, okay. His only obstacle to the throne is the Sultan's daughter. Jafar locks her in a tower and orders her to become his wife, or she will die within 60 minutes.
Oh.
The game's unnamed protagonist, whom the princess loves, is thrown as a prisoner into the palace dungeons. In order to free her, he must escape the dungeons, get to the palace tower, and defeat Jafar before time runs out.
Yes.
Oh, okay. Thank you,
Pete. But again, he doesn't have a name. He's just referred to as the prince or a prince.
And is that the first one, or that's the end of time?
That was the first one.
Okay. Oh, so there was a time element all the time. Haha.
Huh, I see what you did there.
Yes, there was. Which I think was the whole reason of getting Sands of Time involved in that, is that you could back up your own timer enough to save the princess.
Was there an hourglass on the dagger? I'm just wondering.
It was a glass chamber in the handle,
glass
in the
chamber.
Pommel.
Okay, and there was like a red gem?
Yeah, it was a red gem.
Yeah, that was the button.
Yeah.
And that was also, she wore the necklace between... I mean, in her cleavage and with a vine.
Yes.
That's correct.
I'm just checking that. Okay.
So, and apparently, this is trivia in the IMDb page. This is not something that I actually timed because I don't have this sort of initiative to do things with my life. But they were very careful about actually rewinding time the correct number of seconds.
Oh.
So, like,
oh,
the first time he rewinds time by 32 seconds, and the second time
that's
it's 23,
cool.
And that's 55 seconds, and so it's almost a minute. So he's used up all the sand. And then they do it again. They refill the dagger. Then he goes 16 seconds, and then 44 seconds, and that's exactly 60.
Wait, when did you time this?
I didn't do this.
Oh, you didn't.
He totally timed this. He's going to blame this on the trivia page, but it's not true.
Okay.
So that was my favorite piece of trivia, that they were so meticulous with the timing. Of
all the things to do it.
Right.
Like, that would have ruined the immersive experience for someone if the timing was off.
Timing,
all the things that happened in the movie, that was it. Ostrich racing. I mean,
ostrich racing.
For bringing in ostrich racing.
Like, you know
who would have thought of that?
My favorite trivia part of that is that ostriches do not have suicidal tendencies.
Right. There's that too. Yeah. So, I captured a bunch of lines from this, and then I realized that I was capturing all of Alfred Molina's lines.
Oh.
He did his best with that.
I think he really nailed it. I mean,
I think he really enjoyed the part.
Right. It looked like something that was really great that he was having a lot of fun with, and he was, you know, hamming it up, chewing the scenery, you know,
mm-hmm. Which is important.
Indeed.
So give us some of these lines.
I crafted our lurid reputation in order to fend off the most insidious evil that's been lurking in this forsaken country of ours. You know what I'm talking about? Taxes.
So we have our first true libertarian star.
Right.
In a fantasy movie.
Yep. Oh, I thought he said Texas. Oh, geez. It changes everything.
Oh, no.
He's really annoyed with the whole Texas school board.
Yeah, I thought that was a little anachronistic, but...
Yeah,
it's Disney. They can do whatever they want, right?
I think it was the accent.
I mean, it's Sands of Time, after all, so I mean...
Texas makes a little bit more, more sense there. I love it because it's that... I know it's cliche, but that fantasy element where the whole Dread Roberts thing... from Princess Bride, where the whole ruse. Is this a ruse, ma'am?
I don't appreciate your ruse.
Yes, but...
I don't appreciate your clever ruse, ma'am.
Your cunning attempt
to
trick
me. But I like that,
me.
Where he said he got the skeletons from some gypsy, and that they just wanted to cut out a place that they could live in without...
Tax-free.
Tax-free, right. Yeah.
Which was, like, for tourists to come and gamble... But, you know, everyone knows to stay away.
Yeah.
But no one told the bad guys or the tax collectors about it.
Good point, exactly. Matt. Good point.
Yep. Honestly, Matt, the reason why is because the tax collectors like to bet on ostrich races, and that's that's why they're
until they lost.
Yes, exactly.
So, how many? Who found the first plot hole?
Well, there are so many.
Okay, so I say this to Chris in every single movie. This is fantasy, so you have to suspend your disbelief.
But you see, the flip side to that, Sharon, is that if it's not suspending my disbelief, it must not be a good fantasy movie.
Well,
so my first place where I had trouble with my disbelief was when the older brother, Tuss, decided to say this to... There were two people in his company, and they both had been with him all his life. So he says this.
I'll have one last counsel with my noble uncle and my two brothers, Trusted Garsiv and... Where's Dastan?
So why does he have to name them to the only two people? One of them is the brother he's talking about.
You got to realize that, you also have to realize that at that time in the ancient world, that's how people spoke.
Ah, with a British accent.
With a British accent and like a Shakespeare play, naming the people who are on stage with him.
Yeah. Okay. I have to say, coming from a screenwriting background, you do that. Pretty much the first time you introduce the characters, they refer to each other's name to let the audience know what it is.
Yeah, what are their names again? Like, they're just, so think of it like a play.
Right.
And then it doesn't bother you as much.
Tuss was bothering me on the screen for a long time. I'm like, why does he look familiar? Who the heck is this guy?
I know. I was just about to ask that question too.
And I had to look him up, and I went, "Oh my God, that's Jeff
from Coupling."
Jeffrey.
From Coupling.
Now behave yourself, Jeffrey.
Oh goodness.
Shaddai.
Oh, the guy that was on the train with the girl and her breasts.
Yes.
Oh yes. Yes.
And legs.
And legs. Yeah. Right. Yes. Okay. Wow.
Yeah. So the best character on the first couple seasons of Coupling.
Oh yeah, I liked that show.
And then he left to go make his name for himself, and that
was
didn't really
Prince
work
of
out.
Persia.
And Prince of Persia killed his career. Well, it probably didn't kill his career.
He went back to TV.
Yeah, he did. What was his Terry Pratchett? Didn't he do a Terry Pratchett?
He was. He was the guy from Going Postal.
That's right. Yeah.
Really? Okay.
Yeah. He was Moist. He was Moist in Postal, Going Postal.
Well, we're going to have to put that on the list now.
Yes.
Is that fantasy?
Yes.
Oh,
yes, it is.
Okay. Then, well, it goes
You've
on the
You've read Discworld list. Books. You know what Discworld is.
I didn't know that they turned the books into... I learned new things from doing this podcast with you crazy guys.
Hey, fantastic.
I really do.
So Going Postal was actually the same year that Prince of Persia came out. So.
Oh, was it really?
Yeah.
Well, he was,
you see, that I didn't see for many years. I didn't see that until about 3 or 4 years ago.
So, yeah, he's actually working quite a bit. So,
yeah.
So this movie didn't damage him too badly.
So Chris, what was your favorite scene in this movie?
Probably something with
running,
Alfred
jumping,
Molina.
Jumping, climbing.
Yeah, I'm not in along. I think that his were the only... I was not a fan of this movie. I thought it was... forgettable, and those are the only lines, you know. Yeah, Doc Ock, he was the only thing that was memorable in it.
I mean, okay, it's no Princess Bride. Chris is going to kill me for saying this. It's no Excalibur either.
No.
So Matt, I don't know if you want to be part of our ongoing battle, but see,
you're better off. Just run while you can and live a happy and shameless life.
I love Excalibur.
You should go back and listen to the Excalibur episode.
Excalibur.
We're still talking about it.
And
let's loop back to Prince of Persia.
Prince of Persia. I'll never find out what Matt thinks then.
Because
I haven't seen Excalibur in 25 years, probably.
Oh my gosh, you got to rewatch it.
The things from the 80s don't age as well as we think they do.
Right?
With the exception of the Dark Crystal.
We've watched more 80s movies.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I know. I've gone through your back issues.
But there are quite a few. There are a couple of that still have held up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And Excalibur is one of them because it's John Borman. So, you know.
Really?
Yeah, I think I married the wrong man because Pete loves Excalibur and Chris does not. And I just, Chris and I really disagree on Excalibur.
Oh, no. You totally
Sharon, if I agreed with you, we'd both be wrong.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, snap. And at some point, Matt, if you want to go back to our Rule Zero podcast and see Chris and the play ongoing war about Batman and Superman.
Well, okay, so I guess I did marry the right man because Way Superman.
Right.
I mean, Batman just has you money.
Quick.
Oh, I'm sorry, Pete.
So that's fine. You can root for the red and blue phallus and the condom of.
No, it's just Superman is a true superhero. Okay, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Back to Prince of Persia. Okay. So, right. What was your favorite scene, Pete?
My favorite scene was when Sesso manages to defeat the assassin in the chamber and throws the dagger out the window right into the tree between the princess and Amar. Mm. Sheikh Amar, right? That was his name?
Probably. Yes, Amar.
So Alfred, between Gemma Arterton and Alfred Molina, and he looks up the knife and he pulls it out of the tree and he goes, "Have I told you about the N'Baga?"
Yeah.
And he knows that Sesso's dead.
Right.
And he says it, and it's one of those great things about Alfred Molina because he can combine a look and a statement and put such acid in it.
Do you have that?
Not that one.
It's absolutely wonderful. And just like, I've told you about the N'Baga. And he knows he's lost his best friend.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And he still feels, to a certain extent, this is a fool's errand.
Right. And he loses everything. Actually, I mean, if you're that guy in this movie, this is a really shitty day.
But the flip side is, since time resets,
yeah,
it gets it all back.
Just nullifies the whole importance of the whole thing.
Right. So he gets his
ostriches. All the character growth for all the characters, with the exception of vaguely British Gyllenhaal, is just nullified.
No, it really is.
Nothing.
It really is.
So when he comes around and he's kind of more buddy-buddy with Dastan, I think that's probably my favorite part of the movie, when it's them on the screen. He does he does stuff like this.
Have I told you about the N'Baga?
Yes, you have.
Yeah, nothing beats a good story, eh? But yours, however. Trading her in for a camel, please. I mean, look at her. She's worth at least two.
Nice.
She's worth at least two.
I'd go as high as three.
Right?
Yeah.
I'd easily go as far as three, just for the adorableness factor.
Yeah.
And the princess calls the younger brother. Garsev's cavalry. Camel riding illiterates, which I felt was a little bit inaccurate. They're on horses, clearly.
Do you have her voice? I love her voice.
So they're horse riding illiterates?
Right. They're horse riding illiterates. They're not.
You know, she doesn't
illiterates.
Really know them. How could she know that they were illiterate?
The solution would be to kiss me and then kill me. But I have a better solution.
I kill you! And your problems are solved!
She's not wrong.
That's my favorite scene, by the way.
I'll destroy you with my adorableness.
Right.
Take that. Yeah.
But she's tough, too.
How could he start falling for that line? He's like, you should kiss me and then kill me. Oh, yeah, that makes sense. I'm going to be a little bit distracted now by your beauty because that sounds like a sensible plan. That doesn't sound like you're trying to get me close to double crossing.
We established the fact that he's got the hots for her in the movie before this, so it's not that far fetched.
So when was the moment they bonded in this? Like, what was the Han Solo and Leia were they're in the
when they
cockpit
from when they escaped from Amar's ostrich pits?
Oh, I think this scene with the dagger.
Where she tried to stab him?
Yeah.
No, it was much later than that.
You think it was earlier?
No, much later.
Later.
It was later when she saw that he had done something.
No, wait a minute. It was when she was picking on the way he was walking, and she said, "You're walking like a, you know, you just have that, your chest up and all of that, and you're walking like a prince."
Something about like an arrogant prince.
Arrogant prince. And then he says, "Oh, you know, well, I'm not a prince, and I was from the streets," and she's like,
"You know nothing about me, so."
Oh.
I am from the gutter, too.
So, yeah, okay, so I'm sorry. I will take it back and say I think that's when the interest sort of gets piqued. Like, oh, well, you're not a conceited prince. I might be interested.
So maybe that was the start, but I don't think that was the start where she would start to consider him more, but I don't think that was when they became interested mutually.
Side note, that's also some terrible, structurally, some terrible screenwriting, because he is now verbally saying what we have already seen as the audience.
Yes.
So it was, So that's wasted pacing right there. That was unnecessary. Like, it should have been for dramatic irony that he told her something different entirely, and the audience goes, "Ooh, how clever of him!" But
I'm really a fish salesman.
Or their dialogue to become closer was something different. Maybe about her. Yeah, because we don't know anything about her. But the screen, they don't really care about her. I mean,
that was the other thing. Like, she was raised a princess. You know, he could have come right back at her with that.
Yeah, that's true.
He mentions to her that he wasn't raised in a palace like she was.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, so,
yeah, he mentions a few times
but that's
that
as far
spoiled.
As he goes. He doesn't take it farther.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Well, the movie seems to not really like her very much. Because from the beginning, she's, you know, it's like, you know, chattel marriage.
Well, they didn't explore her character. They just said, she's a princess, you know, great.
They do some exposition on that later when she explains the whole How the Dagger Came to Be story. Mm-hmm.
She's
in the direct line of princesses from the first one.
Yeah.
Yeah, but they didn't establish empathy at the beginning with her.
Oh,
she was just laying there, like, I mean, Harry, your city's being ransacked. Well, I'm just going to lay here and, you know, Hooray, you're a hero.
Right, and also the people that we are supposed to like treat her like that they don't care if she lives or dies. And that's, they don't become likable, or they become unlikable by the way they treat this person. But we're still supposed to like those characters.
Yeah.
And Dastan's perfectly okay with the way they're doing it, you know?
Yeah. Well, I mean, he was more upset about having to get married himself,
right.
I believe.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I mean, and they tried to make to establish empathy with him, like, oh, he came from the gutter, like, you know, that's where that information was important at the beginning of the, you know, movie, and they just didn't do that with her, and
they could have very easily, if that scene where we meet her, if she would have been doing something, maybe sort of sweet or I don't know.
Well, I mean, her whole being is about religion. Their religion.
I'm sorry, do you guys know the term save the cat?
I don't think so.
I'm not familiar with it. Is it a screenwriting term?
It's a screenwriting term of, like, within the first time you encounter the character, they need to save the cat, which is, like, they need to, you know, no matter what they're doing, they need to take a moment and do something that makes the audience go, aww.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Okay.
I didn't know what that was called, but I knew, like...
No, it makes sense, but I feel they did the opposite here.
Yeah, I was thinking, like, if she was playing with a wounded puppy or something. Or saving some poor child off the street, or...
Or offered herself in marriage, you know, to save the city, or something to that effect.
Yeah.
You know, like, even if... Which is the obvious choice, but if she had done something clever... To you know, and then look at her. She's just a pretty face.
Maybe I can save the city by
offering my money.
No, offering herself
offer me power. Now offer me everything I want. Sorry.
Bring me back my father. See,
I want my father back.
Princess Bride. That's why Princess Bride is at the top of the scale. That's why it's five gold pieces. Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
Because it's so memorable.
So I felt this movie, I think there were, like, pacing hiccups, like the one you talked about, where they repeated information that the audience already knew, but I thought, for the most part, it moved along pretty well. It's, what, an hour and 45?
Oh.
So?
You know what? We did not ask Matt what his favorite scene was.
Oh, I'm sorry. You're right. We also didn't ask Sharon.
We didn't, but I want to know Matt's first.
But she already said what she said.
I did say mine, just in the course.
So, Matt, what was your favorite scene?
I'm honestly having trouble. I really do think this is it was an adequate movie. It did everything right. It's just, it wasn't bad enough for me to go, it wasn't good enough for me to go,
so bad it went around the spectrum to good again.
Right.
Yeah, I agree that none of it really sticks out as exceptional as far as, like, a scene goes. Nothing was really iconic for the movie.
Right. But it wasn't so bad either that you'd go, wow, I fell asleep during that movie.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I have fallen asleep.
I mean, like, those at least you can get angry or drunk, because then I start drinking.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
this movie made me drunk.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, Van Helsing, I got plastered to get through that one.
Oh, I don't feel it.
Which
I
one?
Feel you there, brother.
So, Helsing? Van Helsing, yeah.
Oh, I never saw that one.
Oh, good.
Well, there you go. We had to make a drinking game through it midway through.
I've got an awful lot of scotch, so maybe I'll watch it.
Yes.
Yeah, go for it. I think one of the rules was every time something anachronistic, like just blatantly anachronistic, pops out.
Speaking of anachronistic, did you see Jake's sneakers?
Well, no.
Apparently, there's a couple of scenes where he's running up a hill or something, running up a slope, and you can see that the shoes that he's wearing are just covers over sneakers.
Oh no, I didn't even notice that.
You sighted people are so funny.
It's hilarious. Propane tank, but
it's no propane tank, but yeah, that's our sneaker. There's a movie called Mythica that our friend Brian was the producer on, and we were watching it. Chris and I were actually in the same room together for once, and we were watching it. And I was like, oh, they were doing so well, and then you could see a propane tank behind a rock generating a flame. And I was just like, oh, you guys were so close.
So close. And that was a good one, too.
It was pretty good for the...
Yeah, we really need to do the second one.
So expectations fit way into my rating on these movies, just as a warning.
Yeah, I didn't expect that much for this one. So therefore...
So video game movies in general...
It's going to be higher than what you would think.
Give you a low bar.
Yeah.
Because I can't think of any really, really great ones.
To be fair, most of them were directed by Uwe Boll, so that's right there, the kiss of death. So
the music was fitting.
This one?
I thought so.
It was good. I thought the music was really appropriate, but I can't remember a single theme.
I mean, I don't remember it either, but... At least it didn't sound out of place.
No, it didn't sound out of place. It was pretty good. I mean, it was an original composition for the movie, and it was
averagely average.
Was exactly what you would expect for an epic. This is a well-made movie. I mean, whatever quality the script has, this was well put together by professional people.
Yeah, it didn't have like the Scorpion King bad special effects kind
oh,
of.
Oh, right. Good guy. Yeah, that like, was yeah, just it, awful.
Yeah, I mean, it didn't break the immersion experience.
Right.
And side note, I've got an article up on Vulture. This is from 2016, and it has 33 video game movies.
Oh, okay.
It rates the number one being Mortal Kombat from 95.
No, get out. No, come on.
Super Mario Brothers mind you, their scale is...
Oh, wait. Are you talking about the worst to best, or...
No, the least bad.
The least bad is Mortal Kombat. Wow.
Yes,
I saw Mortal Kombat 2, and I can't believe that.
So, Matt, where's this one?
Well, that's because Mortal Kombat 2 is way farther down the list.
No, this one is second to the bottom on their list as the second worst movie of all, I believe.
What?
Prince of Persia is?
Yeah.
I wouldn't... What's the bottom?
Postal?
Really?
I've never even heard of that.
Yeah, Prince of Persia.
Because honestly, I would think those were both this and Postal are better than not only Mortal Kombat 2, but House of the Dead.
No, Mortal Kombat 2 is somewhere else in this list. Mortal Kombat 1. Yeah, Mortal Kombat 2 is the eighth worst.
Well, I'm going to do a hard disagree on that list because I felt this was better than things like Super Mario Brothers. This was better than Double Dragon. This was better than... You know, this was better than Tomb Raider.
I'm shocked.
This was better than House of the Dead, and
this was better than the Umbrella movies that I can't remember now with Mila Jovovich in it.
Oh, the Resident Evil movies.
Yeah,
Matt, you have to actually shout over these two guys to be heard. So if you want to say something, just talk over them.
I would say that I would put it exactly in the same place as the first Tomb Raider movie, as in like it was a thing you know what it is. It's not going to be great. You're okay with that. And it was pulled off. There was nothing that was upsetting about it. It was, and I don't want to say adequate. It's serviceable. Let's go with
there you go.
Serviceable.
Well, I got to say, I haven't seen Tomb Raider in a while. So this one stuck out as a better movie. But I would agree that they would be at about the same place.
Who played the king? Did we talk about the king?
In this one?
Ronald Pickup.
Anything special to say about him? Do you have any lines from the king?
I might.
Okay.
I have one line about him. I could have sworn in the opening scene where he showed up, that was Bernard Hill.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
No, definitely not.
Yeah, I do have his only important line. In fact, the whole point of this character, other than setting up the fact that he's adopted, was to deliver this line.
Okay.
A great man would have stopped the attack from happening at all. A great man would have stopped if he knew to be wrong. No matter who was ordering.
I feel that is the entire purpose of that character.
fair enough.
Of the king?
Is to say that.
Telling his son that...
That he expected destined. Better from him.
Yeah.
Yeah, he expected
you should have
more
disobeyed
from
me.
Yeah, and all three sons
no, no,
did.
No. The whole point was that they were disobeying him.
He
said not to attack Alamut, to attack a different place altogether, and they did.
Well, and then they found there was this fake
on
thing
false
about
evidence.
The yeah false claims and now the one of the things that I liked about it is I didn't know who the bad guy was in the beginning.
Really? Because with a fantasy movie, it's almost 9 times out of 10 Ben
the
Kingsley.
The brother? Oh. Well, I mean...
No, it's not just the brother. It's Ben Kingsley.
It's okay. Ben Kingsley, specifically. And there's that a Venn diagram with the sort of side
true.
Of the
circle. I can't,
But I didn't know that. So, you know, in the beginning, I didn't know if it was the oldest
so
son,
here's
the
thing
second
about,
son, the uncle.
That's a problem I had as well, because the second son... whose name I forgot again.
He wasn't very friendly.
Kozlov. No.
Garsev.
He was a dick all the time.
He kind of was.
And he acted like he didn't like Dastan.
Well, that's why I said I didn't know
who I don't think he does.
Red Herring 101.
Yeah.
Right,
I don't think he likes Dastan at all.
And, like, in the end where they make up right before he dies, it's like, oh, we were good brothers all along. It's like, no, you weren't good brothers. He was a dick to
well,
you.
Well, we didn't see that. We don't know what they were like.
Well, maybe in Garza's mind and culturally for the time, they were good brothers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he had a fixed mind for him.
You don't try to kill your brother, then you're not really showing any love.
Yeah,
that's what I'm saying.
You don't belong in the royal house.
To be fair,
Garza does not kill him when he has the chance. He runs him into a hut and makes him talk. Mm-hmm. So,
if
he was being a total dick, he just could have killed him.
He says earlier, you know, we're not playing with wood swords anymore. Mm-hmm. So apparently he did whack him around with a wood
pointy
sword
sticks.
When we were younger. Just, you know,
that's
what boys do. So do you have any other lines for us?
Actually, yeah, this is the exact moment where they fell in love.
Okay, give it to us.
Oh!
Dastan, where's the dagger?
You're welcome to search me for it. You'll have to be very thorough.
That was it. That was the moment.
See, I don't think that's where they fell in love. I think that's where they're being, you know,
no, that's
funny.
That's clearly foreplay right there.
That's foreplay. So that's after they fell in love. Mm. I like when she was pretending, you know, when she was down and he comes, you know, because she asks for water and...
Oh, then she passed
out. Oh, he is, he like
he
fails will save after will save.
And he totally falls for that. And like, I think those are the moments in this that made me kind of like the movie. Like, come on, you're not going to fall. Oh, you totally fell for that. Like, because we...
And it was on the 27th time that Dastan got dirked in the genitals that he realized that this might not be the best way to live a life.
Yeah.
He falls for everything she does, though. He's a complete doof.
Well,
yes,
but that's what makes him adorable, too.
He's a lovable doof.
Yeah.
I'm going to start using the word doof more often.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
He's so lovable. He's not the adorableness that is the princess, but he is fun in his own, like you said, Gyllenhaalic charm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think this is like the last time where they were like, no, I mean, Gyllenhaal can totally carry a movie. He's, he is leading man material. maybe some indie movies. Let's stick.
Yeah,
let's play
and
your
I think
strength.
It's like, as an action hero goes, I think he was okay. I mean, he didn't really have the screen magnetism that Bruce Willis did in Die Hard. Or
well, who does?
Stallone did in First Blood.
I mean, come on.
Right.
Bruce Willis.
Or Rambo, I should say. First Blood was actually, you know, not really an action movie.
Right. I have to say, though, also my biggest complaint about Gyllenhaal is the fact that in Nightcrawler, he was nothing like the X-Man. And I don't know what they were thinking, but
okay. Yeah,
they were
enough.
Way, way off. Uh-huh. So
I applaud that. That one was great, I think.
Thank you.
Is it time to rank this?
Well, I had some other comments about...
Okay,
as far as like the story goes, I thought it was a pretty solid fantasy story. I mean, there were some issues with like the bait and switch about Garsev. You know, the way he was acting mean to Dastan. You know, even though he had nothing to do with the plot. But I think... Like Matt said, that's kind of like how you put in your misleads on purpose.
Mm-hmm. Ubiquitous red herrings?
Right. So I think the story itself was a fairly solid fantasy story. I thought
I agree.
We've seen way worse.
Yeah.
Oh, if God, by the numbers, then yeah.
So if we're comparing, my God, yes.
So much worse.
If we're comparing. Yeah.
And I thought it was mostly executed pretty well, but if you think about it more than a fantasy movie requires you to think about it, you're going to find all of the problems.
Well, I do have a question since we're digging in a little deeper. Uh-huh. How were the fight scenes when the evil uncle goes down into the
Hassansons?
Yeah.
I did not like the CG with the snake guy.
Oh.
No.
Okay.
No, I didn't
either. I thought that was the glaring flaw of the movie.
Oh,
probably the best bit about those guys was the guy who used the whips.
I was thinking the same thing.
Yeah.
Like those whips,
hands
like
down.
Oh no,
it's something else. Whip.
Who cares? Like those things look like they could cut flesh. Like,
oh yeah.
Ooh.
And tear your face clean off, honestly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so. He was pretty cool.
Okay. So what about some of the other fight scenes, like?
They're just fun. They're acrobatic and outlandish.
Right,
you've
got Disney money to choreograph, 90 minutes of fighting, and
so
they
like
used
that.
It. Yeah, I mean,
okay,
yeah,
good.
They really did. Yeah,
they used the money that they had for the budget. And
no, so it fell into, and I'm trying to think of the movie now that I just lost it. So it has a problem when your head bad guy is an old dude. And then, you've got an action movie star who's in his 20s, early 30s, and then they have to fight at the end because you've got to close that loop, and he has to defeat the bad guy. But they have
to
make the people.
It's Attack of the Clones all over again.
I was thinking, what is it?
Christopher Plummer in his 80s fighting in his 20s?
Right. That's a better example. I was going to go with the remake of Total Recall when Bryan Cranston's fighting. You're like, come on, Bryan Cranston. You're the president of the United States, and you're suddenly a great knife fighter at the end when you need to be. Yeah. Like,
I'm pretty sure that at that point in time, that's what you need to be to get elected. But
or when, 70-year-old Christopher Lee is fighting 900-year-old Yoda.
Yes.
That's not a fair fight.
No, not at all.
Well, also, like, in a movie like Braveheart, didn't they have someone...
Don't get me started on Braveheart.
Yeah, two...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. They did that well in Gladiator with they're gonna stab him before they do the fight, so King Phoenix has a chance, but so they didn't. I don't remember them handicapping Gyllenhaal in this one. That's just one thing that pisses me off. He's like, hey, Ben Kingsley is suddenly holding his own and actually winning, because you have to make it dramatic, so you can't just beat the old guy right away. Like, oh, you're so old. But so, anyways, that was one of my pet peeves, and it fell into it.
If I may jump in real quick, being a 50-year-old man who's actually a really good knife fighter, the one thing though that they established very early on is that he's not great, but he's competent. So if Nizam rose up because he is a great fighter, he still knows what to do.
I think he rose up because he was the king's brother.
Possibly, but I mean, he's certainly armed a hell of a lot of times, so I don't know. Anyway.
And it shows.
Was it as good as in the other movie that you guys liked with the thunder, lightning, and I can't remember the...
Oh, Big Trouble in Little China?
Yeah.
Two very different beasts.
Exactly, yeah.
Too different to compare?
Yeah, because again, this is a thing that they wanted to be... John Carpenter in Big Trouble wanted to make it closer to an actual Hong Kong wuxia film.
Wuxia, I love that word.
Whereas Bruckheimer, I think, wanted a little more of the pirate's flair.
Okay.
So there's a lot more swordplay and unnecessarily acrobatic swordplay.
And ostriches.
And ostriches.
No, ostriches.
And guys who shoot darts from the back of their hands, and... guys from the Mbaka who throw all kinds of really cool knives that are actually all African in origin.
Oh, yeah?
Oh.
Yeah.
What about that dart guy? What was powering those darts? Because those were really solid thunks.
It was. They were powered by love.
Oh, love. Okay.
Love.
Yeah, they're totally powered by love.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Okay. Well, I guess I just should do it all for the power of love.
That's pretty much true. Yeah.
Like a magic penny.
Duty forever. Knowing together. That we did it all.
Love is something if you give it away.
That's the glory of love. Yeah.
Well, I heard that that love is like oxygen. You get too much, you get too high, not enough, and you're going to die. So.
I really liked
Are we going to go on Moulin Rouge now?
No.
No. Although technically that could be a fantasy film.
I think it's really awesome when fantasy movies have love stories. I wish D&D had more love stories.
Don't they all, though? I mean, don't they shoehorn a love story into every movie ever?
I don't say shoehorn. Love stories.
No, because they didn't have a love story in Big Trouble.
Yeah.
Well, they thought they did, though.
My God, aren't you even going to kiss her goodbye? Nope.
Nah.
Fantastic. Fantastic. Yeah, what a great group.
I knew you liked that part.
And it's because Jack isn't the hero.
Right. Right. But some people didn't get that.
No, not many people did. Anyway.
Can I just say Kim Cattrall? Kim Cattrall?
Kim Cattrall.
I love Kim Cattrall.
Adorable. Also adorable. Like
Emma. I know.
So the Rotten Tomatoes score on this, the reviewer score is 36%, but the audience score is 58, which I think we can safely put that in the category of guilty pleasure.
Oh, definitely.
I mean, if you want fun action, like if the movie came on television on Sunday afternoon, I probably wouldn't change the channel.
And you were baking cookies at the same time.
I often do, as you do on Sunday afternoons.
Right.
But I wouldn't seek it out if it wasn't for this podcast. I mean, I'm watching it, not being upset by it, and then, you know, but it's, you know, if you want to watch pretty people doing action scenes, mm-hmm. go for it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And watch Gemma Arterton be adorable.
She really was, but I have
but
to say...
But still British.
I kind of agree with you, Matt, that I wouldn't watch this movie unless I was, like, sorting things for school or, you know, putting things in Ziploc bags. You know, just something sort of...
This is what my friends and I would refer to as a PIX movie. There's a New York channel called
channel
WPIX. And they would show on Saturday afternoons movies like this.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
So things that weren't box office... you know, blazes, but stuff that you could put on as a background to doing chores or...
I like that we all have, like, mindless tasks that we expect to be doing during, like, it's great background.
Well, I'm going to be honest with you. If this comes on, I am sitting on the couch watching every damn frame of this movie.
Well, you know what?
Good for you,
I think that's good, Chris, that we have different opinions. Because I've seen it once, and that was enough for me. I think I've watched Excalibur at least 20 times.
So I think I've seen Prince of Persia, The Sands of Time, 3 times now. And I have enjoyed it each time.
I think this might be the 4th time that I watched it.
Okay.
Wow. Well, mostly because
I wanted to show Ronan it.
Okay.
It's you guys have higher numbers than me.
So the first time I watched it, the whitewashing did not occur to me. And then the second time I watched it, I was like, why is everybody British?
Well, to address that, now. I mean, this isn't like, okay, yes, the Prince of Persia, they're, you know, it should be Persian, we would assume. But, you know, do we get upset in watching 300 when they have, like, a Scottish guy playing the lead? I'm not saying that it's, like, whitewashing isn't something to take into account. I mean, like,
but there are degrees, right?
I have to also say that I think we were all fairly blinded by Gerard Butler's 12-pack.
Uh-huh.
Well, his 12-pack. I think we were all fairly blinded by how awesome his abs were.
Yeah. So in the degrees of whitewashing, where would you say this falls? Would you? I mean, this is obviously, as you said, less egregious than Breakfast at Tiffany's.
Yes. Well, I mean, it's certainly not into the hurtful spectrum.
Right.
I've been thinking about this for the last week, about the whitewashing, like, when is it good, when is it bad, and when is it just, you know, like, you're going to go to the movie to see movie stars. Mm-hmm. So it's, you know, and is it more indicative that the fact that we don't have movie stars of color? You know, like, hey, like, oh, you know, so-and-so, he's the Persian actor that, you know, that everyone loves. Like, what's his name? You know, there isn't one. So, like, you know, when you go to see, what was it, Born on the 4th of July, you know, you're there to see Tom Cruise. You're not there to see a handicapped character. So, they cast Tom Cruise instead of finding, you know, one of the many capable handicapped actors. So it's one of those where I think it's more star power. But then again, it was prevalent throughout. So I don't know, being as that there weren't any actors of color in it at all.
Right.
That was very much
so. There almost one. There almost was one. According to the IMDb trivia, they almost cast an actual Persian actress to play the princess, and then what happened was she was arrested in the airport trying to come to the filming, because she had already done a Western movie, and that had offended the censors in Iran.
Oh my God!
Yeah,
that's horrible.
And then they broke out the bronzing cream.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah, they did.
Oh wow! Okay, well that makes me feel a little better.
What surprises me? I know that he's. I understand that he was a bit older for this, but I think he easily could have played Tuss or somebody like Oded Ferrer, because he's done. You know, I mean, he was one of the Magi and the Mummy, and you know, he's done many, many movies. You know, and he's from the area, so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, Pete, I'm going to break in here, and I'm going to say, I'm going to ask you a really important question.
Ask me.
All right. On a scale of 1 to 5 gold pieces.
15! No, I'm sorry.
How do you rate Prince of Persia?
I am going to give this a solid 3 gold pieces.
Wow. Not even change.
Not even change. Just a solid 3.
Awesome.
Let's ask Matt. Matt, on a scale of 1 to 5 gold pieces, what would you give Prince of Persia?
I would keep all my gold pieces, but I would give it 3 stars because, I mean, it was neither, you know, it didn't stick out. It was there. It performed. It's serviceable. It did what it was supposed to do. It didn't blow me away at any point in time.
Okay, so three. So 3 gold. Okay.
So 3. So you're like the Metacritic rating, which is 50.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, it sounds right. I mean, the more people you get voting, the closer you get to what it really is.
True.
Sharon, on a scale of 1 to 5 gold pieces, yes. How do you rate Prince of Persia, The Sands of Time?
Well, you see, I really loved the princess.
Mm-hmm.
I just, one more time, I have to say, adorable.
Oh, yeah, so adorable.
And I couldn't even see her. So, you know, just her voice alone. I mean,
painfully adorable.
I'm going to say, I always have to go higher than Pete, it seems. If people went back and looked at my scores. So I'm going to say 3 gold pieces and 3 silver.
Wow.
Just for sheer adorableness?
Sounds like it.
I liked the romance. I liked the plot. I'm not going to go back and watch it again.
Right.
But, you know, a little bit higher than just average. Like, slight, like, that's why, you know, a little bit. Just a little nudge past 3 gold pieces.
All right. So, Chris.
Yeah.
On a scale from 8 to 12 gold pieces.
Wait a minute. 1 to 5?
Can we adjust for inflation?
No.
Sure. So, a scale from 1 to 5 gold pieces.
Yeah.
How do you, the Prince of Persia, at the Sands of Time?
You know, I'm going to give this one 3 gold and 5 silver. Because while I was watching this, I thought, this is 75% better than Excalibur.
Ouch. Oh, snap.
Wow.
Well, now, I know you did that just for your wife, but...
He's always
I felt this is a solid fantasy movie. And as far as, you know, sitting down and watching an adventure that can entertain you throughout the entire movie, I didn't think there were any real dead spots. It can keep, you know, it keeps going from, it propels itself from scene to scene, and you've got the MacGuffin that they're carrying, which is actually a useful MacGuffin for once. Mm-hmm. It really, I think, was solid as far as like fantasy movies, as far as production value, as far as making a decent film out of a, you know, a fairly mediocre, you know, concept.
I really want hot buttery MacGuffins right now.
Oh,
don't know why.
You need to get some stroopwafels.
Indeed I do. The miracle that is stroopwafels.
Yeah.
I know that I want to read Matt's book now.
Yeah, we'll definitely have to get that on the Kindle. So how many books do you have, Matt?
I have 2, and the third one's coming out in the series of 4 in December.
Excellent.
Yeah, thank you.
And where can we find you online, Matt?
You can find me at mdpresley, P-R-E-S-L-E-Y, .com, and md_presley is my Twitter handle, and yeah. And just hit the website. I do weekly blogging on taking screenwriting techniques and adapting them to novel writing, and
neat.
I make barbecue recipes for fantasy animals, so if you ever need to know how to make hot links out of Minotaur,
wow.
I got it covered.
We were discussing unicorn sausage the other day. What do you think would go well with that?
Well, I actually have unicorn burgers, and so my pitmaster at Bugbear Barbecue, they make it a point, you know, to theoretically what you would do for unicorn, because only of evil alignment would even consider doing that, and obviously we're
right.
Not.
Ooh, yeah.
So.
That goes
but Well, the first thing you need to do is antidote that blood. because, you know, it's purifying. It's really good. So you're going to have to put an equal amount of poison into the meat to try to counteract that.
Good point.
And best use a lackey to then taste it. And if he dies, then, you know, it's fine.
A lackey?
Then, you know, you've put...
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
You know,
taster.
You don't want to taste it yourself. Yeah, yeah.
Right.
So that's the first step.
Okay.
Wow.
All right, Pete, what movie are we doing next?
Next, we are doing Sinbad and the Eye of the Tiger.
Wicked.
One of my favorite Harryhausen takes on Sinbad.
Okay.
It has Patrick Wayne. It has Patrick Troughton.
Lots of Patricks.
Patrick Powers. No, wait. That's Taryn Powers, who's Tyrone Powers' daughter.
Oh,
and it has the first major TV, or the major movie premiere of Jane Seymour.
I knew
I would get Sharon with that one.
I love her.
That's why,
is that
I
why
saved
you picked
it for
one?
Last.
Okay.
I saved it for last for that hook.
I
so
love
the
Jane Seymour. I mean, I'm showing my age now, but I saw
Sharon,
her.
Sharon, you show your age every time we talk about movies.
I saw her in East of Eden, and I fell in love with her.
Well, this was her first big screen. I think this was her first big screen. It's either this one or... Live and Let Die.
Oh my gosh.
So.
If I wasn't married to a man,
Jane Seymour?
No, I would like lick her shoes.
Oh,
like,
hello.
You know, I'm just saying that. Oh.
So we went there.
Yeah.
I just.
Well, you know, there's a fetish for everyone.
Yeah, there is. There is.
I adore her.
There's also apparently Albanian ninjas. I was not aware of that.
I'm not aware of that fetish.
Wow.
Yeah, so.
All right, so join us next time when we will watch a Sinbad movie that we've been looking forward to for a very long time. And
thank you, Matt. And
thanks for joining us, Matt. I hope you
keep
can stay
it
with
real.
Us. And we will see everybody next time. And
fantastic.
Keep it real.
Keep it real.
Thanks for staying with us to the end of the episode. If you enjoyed this show, please go to iTunes and or Stitcher and give us a good review. That'll let us know what you think and also help other people find the show. Dragon Reel would love to hear from our listeners. You can email us at dragonreelpodcast@gmail.com and follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/dragonreel. Join us on Twitter at twitter.com/dragonreel. If you want to comment directly on any episode of Dragon Reel, go over to our website, dragonreel.com, and leave us a comment. You can also give your rating of the movie yourself on our scale of 1 to 5 gold pieces. You know, the best way to enjoy the episode is to watch the movie with us, so while you're at our website, click our Amazon links to get your copy of the movie. If you go to Amazon from our site, you can buy anything on Amazon and they will give us a few copper pieces to keep our show going. Our music is by Maggie Sansone and is used with permission. You can find this music and much more at maggiesmusic.com. Please join us again next episode.